for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. President Obama is in Guadalajara, Mexico, for a summit of North American leaders. The escalating drug violence in Mexico continues to be a major concern, but economic challenges and trade issues are also high on the agenda. Joining me here in the studio to talk about U.S.-Mexico relations, Francisco Gonzalez. He's Associate Professor of Latin American Studies at the Johns Hopkins University. Also, Peter DeShazo. He's with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Joining us by phone from Dallas, Texas, Vonda Felbob-Brown of the Brookings Institution. She's also adjunct professor at Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service. We do invite your calls, questions, comments. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. Joining us briefly at the top of the hour, Edward Alex Lee. He's director of the Office of Mexican Affairs and at the Department of State previously. Mr. Lee was the director of Canadian Affairs. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Diane.
I wonder if you could give us a brief outline of what was on the agenda for these three leaders and what came out of their meetings.
Well, Diane, actually, the process is still going on. As I'm speaking, the three leaders are having their final meeting, which they will break up and then go into a press conference. The main thing, I think, is that the three leaders decided that they wanted to continue this trilateral process. President Obama had met with both President Calderon and Prime Minister Harper individually, but here is the opportunity for them to have met trilaterally and continue this kind of North American exchange at a very high level of issues that kind of span our borders. And it is a very rich agenda, and it's an agenda that basically continues on existing work. For example, previous trilateral discussions had led to planning for flu epidemic in the future. And this planning was turned out to be a terrific investment and effort with the H1N1 and kind of highlighted the utility that I think average citizens can understand in all three countries of identifying a problem, working together trilaterally to address this issue.
There were certainly trade issues on the agenda as well as the war on drugs.
Exactly. The meeting offered an opportunity for the three presidents to compare notes on how each of them were dealing with trying to revitalize their economy and get their countries out of these economic difficult times, and identify ways that their governments can cooperate on reducing trade frictions across our land borders, encouraging greater investment among our three countries, and basically understanding how revitalizing our continental economy, in a sense, our North American economy, it can play a very positive role in spurring the global recovery.
And
so that was one element.
And one last point, there was a trade dispute between the U.S. and Mexico after the U.S. canceled a program that allowed Mexican trucks to operate here in the U.S. How is that to be addressed?
Well, in the $15 trillion economy, three ways. There are obviously the occasional trade dispute, and trucking is indeed one of them. And both President Obama and President Calderon spoke about trucking, and President Obama kind of showed President Calderon how the U.S. Was developing an approach that we would try to balance Mexico's desire for us to work with them on trade with congressional concerns. And so that was one key issue that was discussed.
And then another issue, Canada, between Canada and Mexico, that is the entrance and exit with or without visas from each of those countries.
I'm sure that was an issue that the Canadians and the Mexicans probably discussed directly in their bilateral meeting, but we didn't play a role in that discussion. There are a couple of other issues, I think, kind of overarching that are worth highlighting, and one of them is President Obama wanted to discuss with Prime Minister Harper and President Calderon ideas for ensuring and promoting kind of energy efficiency and climate change and to try to ensure kind of a cleaner North American space for future generations. And both President Calderon and President Harper have a keen interest in this discussion. And I think and we hope that the discussion among the three leaders will kind of identify a way forward that we can work together in kind of global climate negotiations and identify where the three countries can also work together, because we have a kind of climate green energy bilateral mechanisms with both Mexico and Canada, and now we're trying to fuse and see if we can get kind of a trilateral synergy.
Alex Lee, he's director of the Office of Mexican Affairs at the Department of State. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
And turning to you now, Francisco Gonzalez, looking at these meetings, how much synergy was involved in terms of the kinds of issues that needed to be raised among these three leaders?
I think that thus far, the meetings have been quite effective. There's always the tension regarding the fact that Canada would rather have a very strong bilateral relationship with the U.S. And does not like to discuss things trilaterally that much. The key issue, I am Mexican, the key issue for me is the Mexico-U.S. relationship, which, as our colleague beforehand was telling us, is has become a minefield with lots of concerns, trade concerns, most importantly, by far the most important, the issue of the war on drugs. And so my sense is that the center of gravity of this whole summit is going to be the war on drugs.
Peter Tuchezo, how do you see it?
The United States has very important bilateral relations with both Canada and Mexico because they're key trade partners, key energy partners, the border, everything else. The Canada-Mexico relationship has taken on a larger profile over time. I think it's moving in a direction of greater interest and greater cooperation in interest in that regard. But the U.S.-Mexico relationship certainly is very important, and the security component of that, especially the issue of drug-related violence in Mexico, is a key one.
Vonda Bell Bob Brown, even as we mention the war on drugs in Mexico, New York Times is reporting this morning that a Mexico lawyer who represented drug traffickers, but who had also spoken out strongly against the government accusing politicians and prosecutors of allowing criminals to operate. She was assassinated yesterday. What can you tell us about that?
Hello, Diane. Well, I don't know that I can tell you any more specific details about the killings, other than to emphasize that this is yet another demonstration of the extraordinary toll that the war on drugs is taking is exacting in Mexico. And indeed, the approach that President Calderon has undertaken, while brave, has so far failed to reduce the violence. And it's becoming questionable how long the current strategy will be sustained without some major improvements, at least in some areas that his administration identified as priority areas, such as the city of Juarez, where unfortunately violence in May and June and July has again spiked to peak levels indeed. And this is, of course, taking place in the context of a real questioning of the Mexican public, of more and more human rights allegations against the military. And so clearly, the Mexican government, with our help and also with the help of Mexico and jointly in the effort, will need to think about how to adjust the strategy to reduce violence while being continually effective against the cartels.
Vanda Felbob Brown, she's at the Brookings Institution, adjunct professor at Georgetown University. We'll be right back. And as we talk about U.S.-Mexico relations, the current drug wars, the fight against what's happening in Mexico regarding drugs, Peter DeShazo is here. He's at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Francisco Gonzalez is with the Johns Hopkins University. And Vanda Felbob Brown is at the Brookings Institution. We are going to take your calls, 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. Francisco, we were talking just before the break about what's happening with monies going to Mexico to help fight the drug war. Senator Leahy has called for further review before that pledged U.S. assistance is dispersed. Give us some background on the agreement and what's happening.
The Mérida Initiative came in force in 2007, and it contemplates a pledge of $1.4 billion to help train the Mexican security forces to pursue the war on drugs. 15% of the allocations of money are subjected to a congressional oversight of human rights performance in Mexico. And from my perspective, I completely agree with Senator Leahy, who has stopped $100 million being disbursed to Mexico. He rejected a State Department report that literally tried to whitewash, at least from the perspective of many analysts, some of the military abuses that have been committed in Mexico in the pursuit of the war against drugs. Senator Leahy tells us the military strategy alone is not a solution. Without an effective police force and justice system, Mexico cannot fight this war on drugs effectively. I totally concur with him.
Give me examples of how the military has carried out so-called abuses.
Well, you've got the Comisión Nacional de Derechos Humanos in Mexico, the National Commission of Human Rights, issuing 26 reports with evidence of torture in 17, evidence of killings, rape, arbitrary detention. And the worst thing, of course, the crimes in itself are the worst thing, but the issue of impunity is dreadful in Mexico. Not a single military officer has been convicted of any of these atrocities. This is why Senator Leahy rightly has stopped the buck and say, let the Mexicans get their act together before we support them.
Now, it's interesting because General Jones, the Director of National Security here in Washington, has said again, I'm quoting from this morning's New York Times, I think the Calderon government has, in fact, performed very courageously in the face of these cartels, and I think we have to do everything we can to be a helpful neighbor and partner. How do you interpret that, Peter DeShazo?
I think it's a recognition of the fact that what goes on in Mexico in terms of security and against drugs certainly affects the United States. The Obama administration stated that we have a joint responsibility in working with Mexico because the fact that the United States is the is where the demand for cocaine and for methamphetamines are coming from that are being trafficked through Mexico into the U.S. Also, we're a source of many of the illegal weapons that fuel the violence in Mexico, and we have to do a better job of controlling the illegal flow of weapons into that country. The money that was allocated under the Merida Initiative is for training. It's for improving not just law enforcement, but also the follow-up to that of judiciary in Mexico, which is really key in terms of being able to establish the rule of law in the country and improve the quality of policing, which is very deficient.
But would you agree with Francisco that there have been huge violations of that kind of treatment on the part of the Mexican police?
Human rights violations are not going to solve anybody's security problems. And the denunciations that have come out about the human rights violations need to be followed up. And you've got to have effective law enforcement that has credibility and legitimacy to be able to deal with these kinds of issues.
Vonda, from your perspective, how effective has the Calderon government been in trying to rein in these kinds of abuses?
I think there are ways to improve the effectiveness on that score. Clearly, it's a very sensitive issue for Mexico, and especially for the Mexican military. That is one of the most opaque, closed, and least transparent institutions in Mexico. At the same time, paradoxically perhaps, the military is also one of the most respected institutions, far more so than the police, that is overwhelmingly and appropriately so seen as corrupt and ineffective. And this applies not simply to the drug trade and the police dealing, law enforcement dealing with organized crime. It also applies to street crime that is very large in Mexico and largely unresolved. Law enforcement is critical for ensuring the elemental function of the state, and that's provide safety for its citizens. This implies both to violations of safety due to organized crime, but also due to street crime. So improving law enforcement is absolutely essential. and U.S. assistance here might be very welcome.
Hmm.
And in fact, I think it's a major bilateral step for the two countries, especially for Mexico, to accept U.S. assistance in training and institutional change.
But
much of the money that's actually allocated under Merida is going for technical aspects of institutional improvement.
I see.
Rather than for actual reform of the institutions, a reform of what it means to be a cop, how he or she relates to the public.
But, Francisco, how did the Mexican people, the citizens themselves, regard the approach that President Calderón has taken?
Society has become increasingly divided, Diane. President Calderón, has to be said, retains high levels of approval among the Mexican public, around upper 50s, 60s. So personally, the Mexican people acknowledge that he, so to speak, took the bull by the horns and declared a war which, to all intents, Mexico had been already experiencing at least since 2004, 2005. Those are the years when drug-related violence really gets out of hand during the tenure of the previous president. So on the one hand, you've got a public which recognizes the courageous approach by the president. On the other hand, the means through which this has been carried out have increasingly been questioned, because Mexico is a very complex society. You're talking about a country with 110 million people, 31 states plus the capital city, the kind of federalism, say, like the U.S. has. The infrastructure, the legal as well as the operational infrastructure, is simply not there to match the good intentions of the president and his team with the prosecution on the war on drugs.
Peter, how does the drug trade in Mexico compare to what's happening in Colombia?
The situation in Mexico has some similarities and of course, is linked to Colombia. About 90% of the cocaine that enters the United States is coming through Mexico, mostly from the Andean regions in the south, Peru, Bolivia, more Colombia and Peru. The big difference between Mexico and Colombia was that Colombia had a very active leftist insurgency that was fed off of the drug trade, also a paramilitary movement that both fought the leftists and also were important drug dealers and protectors and very closely linked to the drug industry themselves. So you had these extra, these illegal armed groups that were operating on the margins of that were complicating the situation that don't exist in Mexico. Mexico, you have the cartels, as in Colombia, and I think some of the violence and the spike in violence sometimes is an indication that the cartels are actually in trouble, that they are fighting more desperately for control of the drug trafficking routes. When the state hits them hard, they hit back. And they would rather operate as businesses and not have this level of violence. It doesn't behoove them unless they really need to carry it out.
But Francisco, enlighten us on the young woman who was assassinated Sunday.
This is someone who had become one of the most prominent voices, if not directly on behalf of the drug traffickers. What she acknowledged was that every individual in a state with a rule of law has the right to be defended. Very vocal person, someone who, before her sad ultimation, had suffered four or five attacks against her. Who might have killed her? A lot of controversy there, but certainly, given that she denounced both authorities, state as well as federal authorities, who in many cases are in collusion with some of the drug trafficking cartels. In other cases, drug cartels whose enemies this lady was defending might also have decided to pull the trigger. The way she was ultimated, the Mexican media, the way it was reported was, it was not that she was shopping. She was shot at a shopping mall. It was not that she was shopping. She went in there looking for sanctuary at noon or 1 p.m.
She knew she was being followed. Is that it?
She knew she was being followed. This is someone who had already put bulletproof glass in her office, who had a couple of bodyguards. And nonetheless, these people mercilessly, in front of Mexican families shopping on a Sunday, they killed her brutally.
Help me to understand your agreement or disagreement with Peter that, in fact, the cartels are in trouble, and perhaps the violence has increased because of that.
On the one hand, I concur with Peter's idea that without a frontal onslaught against the cartels, it's very probable that we wouldn't have seen this spiral of violence getting out of control since around 2004, 2005. So certainly the very aggressive response of the cartels is first and foremost a function of the fact that they are being chased around. Where I would probably disagree a bit with Peter is to what extent this means that the cartels are weak or weakening. Mexico, a country where this year, for example, we're expecting GDP to fall 7%, worse than the previous two worst collapses. Approximately 2 million jobs are expected to be lost between 2008 and 2010. The key issue here is that the cartels are always going to have a supply of youngsters willing to join their ranks.
At 26 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And joining us now by phone from El Paso, Texas, John Morton. He's Assistant Secretary in the Department of Homeland Security, Immigration, and Customs Enforcement. Good morning to you, John. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane.
Would you talk about the role of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement in light of what Francisco was just talking about, the concern about the economy of Mexico?
Well, I'd start by saying that it's very much a serious challenge, but at the same time, it's a unique opportunity. I've been in this business over 15 years, and I've never seen the level of cooperation between Mexico and the United States that exists now. You have a team in Mexico that is truly trying to make a difference and willing to work with the United States as a partner in ways never seen before. And you have our agency, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, not just working on the border, but working directly with Mexico, with Mexican officials, not only in Mexico City, but throughout the country.
Well, give me an idea about the trends in terms of illegal immigration and cross-border smuggling.
Well, you have four principal areas. You've got very serious trends of drugs and people coming north, and you have very serious trends of money and guns going south. And we work on all four. We work with our state and local partners, and we work with our Mexican officials. For the first time ever, we have Mexican law enforcement officials in our border enforcement security task forces along the border, an extraordinary step forward. And as you've also probably seen, we're using the same cooperation, the spirit of cooperation, to get our own house in order, and you're going to see DEA and ATF and FBI and ICE working in ways never seen before, recognizing that this is a really serious challenge, but it's also a unique opportunity for all of us to make an important difference in a partner that can't fail.
Give me an example of how you are working with the Mexican government.
Well, through Merida, we're engaged in a lot of training, and we're training their new officers, as your listeners may know. They are overhauling the Ministry of Public Security to address some of the very issues raised earlier on the call. In other words, the need to professionalize and strengthen law enforcement and judicial authorities. We're also working to create joint units in Mexico where our agents work with their agents to investigate money laundering, drug trafficking, the cartels, and the illicit movement of contraband.
And the illicit movement of contraband is certainly something of great concern for both governments.
Absolutely. It crosses the border going both north and south. There's a real concern, particularly in these economic times, of the theft of economic duties, customs duties, petroleum products. As you know, Mexico, the petroleum company, is controlled by the state. And the same from the United States.
John Morton, Assistant Secretary in the Department of Homeland Security. Thank you so much for joining us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, informing health reform with policy research, data, and expert commentary. On the web at healthreform.org. By the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide. On the web at fordfound.org. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
It was the longest and most expensive campaign in history. Two veteran journalists offer new insights and analysis at the 2008 presidential election. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And just before the break, we were talking about immigration and efforts by the Department of Homeland Security to work with the Mexican government to step up enforcement at the borders. But I want to ask you, Vonda, what has the economic downturn meant for illegal immigration?
Well, there are two aspects to the effect. On the one hand, the economic downturn, which is very severe in the U.S. and very much so in Mexico, has generated great pressures toward unemployment. The Mexican economy is expected to lose between 750,000 and 1 million jobs this year. And this already on top of a situation where vast segments of the population work in either informal or outright illegal economy. So the downturn, of course, generates further pressure for outlets in informality or illegality. At the same time, of course, one of the outlets has been to cross the border into the United States and find employment for undocumented workers in the U.S. And that venue has been shut down to some extent because, of course, there is also a major depression of job opportunities in the U.S. And consequently, we are seeing rather substantial drops in the amount of workers coming from Mexico into the U.S.
Interesting.
Corollary with that, of course, is we are seeing a significant drop of remittances coming from Mexico, coming from the U.S. to Mexico. And remittances are about the third greatest source of revenue as percentage of GDP for Mexico. So this is very significant. Mm. And although it's only 3% of GDP, for families in especially the poor states of Mexico in the south, like Guerrero, Oaxaca, Puebla, this might be as much as 80% of income a family receives. So the economic consequences of the drop in remittances are very significant.
All right, let's open the phones. We'll go now to St. Louis, Missouri. Good morning, Lee. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. My question is regarding the assassination of a lawyer in Mexico who represented the drug cartels. Was she a victim of an official hit squad? That's my question.
And the answer to that is a straightforward yes. She was executed by, we still don't know which particular cartel, but by hitmen presumably working for the cartels.
But could she, and this is my understanding of Lee's question, might she also be a victim of a government hit squad?
That is a very provocative hypothesis. I doubt that that would be the case. But what we cannot rule out is that the cartel that ultimated this lawyer might have had dealings with, say, state-level officials in Nuevo León, the border state where this occurred. That is something that would not surprise me.
All right. Here's an email from Jamie, who says, your guest runs to critique the Mexican army's handful of violations yet to be proven. Where is his critique of the barbarities of the drug dealers? Decapitations, kidnappings, killing of civilians go unchecked by this one-sided comment and in a way support them by ignoring them. Francisco.
I try to be balanced. My answer to that question is the evidence is there. Human Rights Watch has documented military abuses of at least 70 victims in Mexico, and the National Commission for Human Rights in Mexico has 26 detailed reports with evidence, as I said, of killings, torture, rape, arbitrary detention. This is not a game of let's see who's worse than who. Both sides are committing acts of barbarism, and the key point here is, what means do we have at our disposal to try to stop this spiral of violence?
All right, to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Good morning, Barry.
Hi, Diane.
Hi there.
What I hear here is an academic discussion. I've been to Mexico four times. I had illegals live with us for 5 years. My friend tried crossing the border six times to get back to the United States while I told him to stay there. I was going to run for Congress. I'm on the ballot for governor of New Jersey. My whole platform has everything to do with Mexico. I was on the phone with him last night, and I learned from him last night that you now need a visa to go to Canada. We were there 2 months ago looking to get him a job in Toronto, Canada. I had no help from the members of parliament from Canada. Bonnie Moxley was the office I was in. The last day of our week there, we found him a job on a farm outside of Toronto, and the wife of the farmer was Venezuelan. My friend's speaks pretty decent English, but they were able to converse in Spanish. She told him exactly what to do when he went home, since you have to go home first, and he was required to go home after landing in Canada. He did everything she asked him to do. He went to the offices where she told him to go, and Diane, I hate to say it, it's like a banana republic down there. They just brushed him off, told him to come back sometime in November. Now, he had a job waiting for him in Canada there, and they're going to have this discussion with the three heads of states now. They told him to come back in November, didn't take any information off of him. He'll go back in November. They'll pretend someone else in an office that he was never there in the first place.
All right, Barry. Peter DeShazo, Do you want to talk about this visa question and how that's being dealt with?
Canada has recently now imposed a visa on Mexicans who wish to travel to Canada, and this is an issue, of course, that has received a considerable amount of criticism in Mexico, and one that I assume has been discussed.
And Mexico is now saying they'll require visas from Canadians wanting to go into Mexico.
Well, the number of Canadian tourists coming to Mexico is essential to Mexico's economy, as is the U.S. tourist industry, and the Mexicans will want to make sure that the flow of tourists continues. But I'm sure this was an issue that was on the bilateral agenda between Prime Minister Harper and President Calderon when they met.
All right. Thanks for calling, Barry, and to Hagerstown, Maryland. Good morning, Jerome.
Good morning. This is like a deja vu moment for me. If I had been listening to this program 20 years ago, I would have heard the exact same thing. This is a colossal waste of resources and people's spirit. If we legalized drugs, we would take care of this problem, but nobody has the moral turpitude to do this.
I doubt that that came up among the three leaders. What do you think, Francisco?
I doubt that they would have talked about this openly, but I hear out there a growing concern along the lines of this caller, and in my case, the key issue would be to transform drug use from a criminal to a public health problem. Legalizing that might be a bit more problematic, but let's take first steps first. Transform drug use from a criminal to a public health problem, bring down demand, particularly from those really hooked up on drugs who just cannot stop. That would help to start denting supply.
Peter.
The drug problem really needs to be dealt with at a macro level, an international level where demand is an important factor involved in the overall drug business. To put a lot of pressure at one point in the drug trade will lead to certain benefits locally, but oftentimes there's spillover, the balloon effect, and it really needs a very broad-scale solution. Europe is part of the demand problem for drugs coming out of the Andes. Mexico is a country that's a conduit, and the Mexican cartels are involved. The United States is the big market for the drugs. There has to be a lot of international cooperation in this issue.
Vonda, what's your own thinking?
I broadly agree with Peter's comments. Clearly, the supply source country-oriented approach towards narcotics that the U.S. has maintained for the past 20, 30 years has not been effective. There is no significant shortage of any drug in the world. Demand has been increasing in many parts of the world, including in Europe, including in Mexico and elsewhere. And that's, of course, fueling violence and various interdiction pressures simply shift trafficking routes and violence associated with that along the border, focus and among various countries. So focus on demand is critical, both on treatment and on prevention. And the Obama administration has very clearly committed itself here to really focus on demand. Unfortunately, the budget that was submitted really doesn't reflect this new demand. Much of it was crafted arguably very early in the administration. There will be opportunities for a revision of the budget that will put far stronger emphasis on demand. At the same time, however, law enforcement is absolutely essential. But law enforcement perhaps should be rethought in what its goal should be, from thinking that it can stop supply, as much of law enforcement and interdiction has been focused, to making sure that cartels, drug trafficking organizations, organized crime don't accumulate too much power, coercive power or corruption power, with which then they can undermine state institutions and threaten public safety.
All right. Here's a question for you, Vonda, from Mary, who says guns from the USA and the U.S. demand for drugs are fueling the kidnappings, murders, and intimidation in Mexico. I feel the gun dealers who sell at these gun fairs are part of the circle. Who is taking responsibility on the gun issue on this side of the border? Vonda.
Again, the Obama administration has appropriately and courageously focused on gun smuggling, very much at the urgings of the Mexican government, as well as on bulk cash smuggling going to Mexico. One of the program's institutions instituted its Operation Gunrunner that will focus on inspecting vehicles coming from the U.S. into Mexico and looking for weapons smuggled. There are far further opportunities to focus on gun shows and go after straw purchasers, etc. Of course, then here it gets into both difficulties with respect to gun reform. Emblematic of it was the inability of the Obama administration to reinstate the ban on assault weapons, as well as in some of the technical challenges that are involved with interdicting guns.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Francisco.
I would agree with Wanda that part of the effort that the Obama administration has carried out is commendable. Around $25 million in cash have been confiscated this year, five times more than last year. All trains at main border crossings are now being inspected. But the key issue, let's remember, the key issue is the assault weapons. Without reinstating the ban on the retail sale of assault weapons in the U.S., these dealers in the U.S. are doing is simply lowering the costs of doing business for the cartels.
Peter.
The nations of the Western Hemisphere have signed an inter-American convention, a treaty basically that's legally binding, to fight the illegal manufacturing and trafficking of weapons. The United States signed that treaty in 1996 but didn't ratify it. And President Obama, in his previous visit to Mexico, said that this would be a priority for his administration, and it's very important that he said that and that it be ratified.
All right. To Warrior, Alabama. Good morning, Anthony. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. My question is, with the stricter enforcement of border security in both Canada and the United States, why isn't Mexico creating jobs for Mexicans at home?
Francisco.
Very good question, and several answers to that. But I think the most important one is that even though Mexico has modernized itself quite substantially during the last 10 to 15 years, Mexico used to be an authoritarian country. It's now a democratic country. Mexico pledged to join the modern economy, the globalized economy, but by signing NAFTA in the U.S. When you look at the domestic economic structure of Mexico, it is an economy that continues to be plagued by both public and private monopolies. Doing business in Mexico, services in Mexico continue to be pretty expensive. And the end result of that is that the economy remains pretty uncompetitive. Many of the foreign firms that would like to do business in Mexico, because at the end of the day, you've got a big market, 110 million consumers, do not come to Mexico because it is an expensive economy to operate in. Monopolies in Mexico are to blame, and these have not been tackled.
So the final question, what do you see, Peter, as the top priority for the U.S. vis-a-vis Mexico? Is it drugs? Is it immigration? Is it gun trafficking? What is number one?
I would say that number one, from the Mexican point of view, is the recovery of the U.S. economy, because that is absolutely essential to the Mexican economy, because the Mexican economy is so tightly linked to Mexico. And from the United States point of view, it is the economic well-being and the security of Mexico. Those are sort of interlinked topics that are extremely important because the United States and Mexico are such close neighbors and are so interdependent.
And Francisco, what would you put as the top priorities?
Two very specific points. Reinstate the ban on retail sale of assault weapons, number one. And number two, transform drug use from a criminal to a public health problem. Easily said, very difficult to carry it out.
I should say. Francisco Gonzalez, he's with the Johns Hopkins University. Peter DeShazo, he's director of the Americas Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And Vonda Felbaugh-Brown, she's at the Brookings Institution. She's also adjunct professor at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.